Welcome to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren. I have a special episode for you all this week. You may recall that I formed a business called House Money Media with my friend and now business partner, Alan Corey. We have a weekly podcast over there. It's very real estate focused. Today, I'm bringing you House Money Podcast 26. Hope you enjoy it. So, Alan, you texted me the other day that you recorded several walkthroughs of your LTV.
Yeah, I was doing walkthroughs of my loan-to-value spreadsheets. That's what I meant.
Because I was expecting walkthroughs of your LTRs for our LTR course.
Nope. Walking through the LTVs. No, just kidding. You're right. I was trying to make. I did make LTR walkthroughs. Autocorrect. I'd never seen me, I guess, do that before, but as known, I've texted LTVs quite often. So it auto-corrected that to LTVs. And I was like, Lauren's going to know what this means anyway. But
I love that. Chris, do you know what LTVs are?
Yeah. Well, loan to value. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what LTRs are?
Long-term rentals.
Oh, yeah. Good. All right. Good. You're qualified. Hey, why don't you tell people, why don't you tell our listeners who you are?
Hi. Yeah, my name is Chris Luger. I'm with Heavy Metal Money, a little blog. I talk about real estate, spending, saving, investing, side hustles, everything turned up to 11. That's my jam. So thank you both for having me today.
Turned up thank to 11. You. That's what's the name of that movie?
Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap. Yes.
Yeah. It's it's one of the references. Yeah.
This is the House Money Podcast. Hosts Lauren Keen Almond and Alan Corey started investing in real estate in their 20s. Thanks to real estate, they were able to leave the corporate world in their 30s. Superhost Lauren has a portfolio of a dozen rentals on the west coast of Florida. Realtor Alan has six small multifamily properties and over 300 doors in large multifamily partnerships in Atlanta. House Money Media's mission is to launch first-generation real estate investors like you.
Welcome to another episode of the House Money Podcast. This is your host, Lauren, and I will be joined shortly by my co-host, Alan, as well as a guest co-host. We also have an interview with a roofer, Paul the Roofer. He agreed to be interviewed. We're also going to be covering House Money Weekly number 125, Three Essential Skills. And then our guest host is bringing us inspections. Let's dive in. What do you have for us? What blog are we doing this week, Alan?
All right. I'm excited to share House Money Media blog number 125, as I do each week. It's something I've written, typically questions that I get asked by clients. I'm a realtor or past investors, people who've read my books. This one is sort of a recap of three essential skills every real estate investor must have. And we'll cover those three skills. But first, let's throw it to Jasmine at Jasmine Mortgage Team for this week's Mortgage Minute. We're with Jasmine of Jasmine Mortgage Team, our favorite mortgage lender here. Question for today's Mortgage Minute. When is the first mortgage payment due after you close on a property?
So it's always going to feel like you get to skip a mortgage payment because mortgages are paid in arrears. Mortgage interest is paid in arrears versus when you're renting on January 1st, your rent is due for January versus when you have a mortgage, all the interest for January has to accrue before your mortgage payment is due on February 1st. So it's going to feel like you are getting to skip 1 month. So if you close towards the end of the month, you may pay a couple days of interest and then you skip the first month and then you have your first mortgage payment after that. But typically, however many days there are, like whichever day of the month you close, let's say you close on the 15th, that prepaid interest, I always like to tell people it's like it's rent. Think of it as rent. For those 15 days that you are in the home, you're going to have that prepaid interest that you're paying at closing. And then you have to wait for the interest to accrue for the first month before your first payment is due.
All right. Thank you, Jasmine. Appreciate it. If you guys want to book a call with Jasmine, get all your mortgage questions answered, get pre-approved, get ready to buy your next property, go to jasminemortgageteam.com and click on the House Money Media calendar and get your free mortgage consultation.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jasmine. Appreciate it. All right. So getting into the blog 125, I'd love to hear if I'm accurate here. This is my assessment of the three essential skills every real estate investor must have. I'm not saying every skill, but the three essential ones. I would love to hear both your input, Chris and Lauren. Skill number one, being optimistic. And what I mean by this is I have people who I've tried to get into real estate investing. Well, they've come to me because they want to get investing. And what stops them is they have a worry about, what if that tree falls? What if this 500-year survey map of the flood is inaccurate? What if that train goes off the train tracks and hits my building? I'm like, we can fantasize every disaster scenario, but how about we fantasize about what if Amazon headquarters comes into town and that increases rent, you know, or a Whole Foods or a Starbucks gets built down the street or some sort of park comes in. Why don't we can fantasize those? Like, that is just as likely probably to happen, if not more likely than some of these disaster scenarios.
Yeah, it's not easy to do. I think it's easy. I think everybody as human beings, we have a fear of loss more than we have this optimism around gains. And so I think that's probably a natural thing to do. But I like that you called this a skill, Alan, because what I want to point out is that I think skills can be sharpened. And I think if you work on this, you can actually become more optimistic over time.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, Alan, like you said, I'm more of a glass half full kind of guy. So I always try to look at the positive. And sometimes, you know, you always have the worry. Lauren, like you said, we as humans, we always will gravitate towards the negative, and we have to sharpen that skill to look at the possibility and be optimistic. So I definitely think that is a skill that we should have for sure.
Alan, haven't you had like a big, what if positive thing happen to your properties like multiple times?
Yeah. I call them imaginary lottery tickets, things that are out of my control that have just happened and just, you know, doubled or tripled the property value. I had two townhomes, or duplex townhomes in Brooklyn, New York. They all went up $1 million each, not because I did anything. I bought them for the long-term hold, cash, regular cash flow, you know, about $1,000 here, you know, $1,500 here on the other one. And New York Nets, well, the New Jersey Nets turned into the Brooklyn Nets, moved to town right down the street. All these businesses turned Brooklyn into what was the redheaded stepchild of Manhattan, now became the cool hipster mecca that it is today. And these big organizations wanted to headquarter in Brooklyn. And, you know, I had these properties that were the street was all 99 cent property or 99 cent stores and liquor properties. When I bought, that's all I could afford at the time. And I sold them to celebrities. Christina wow. Ritchie, who's an actress, bought one of the properties, and a politician bought another one. But it was sort of really kind of a cool transition. I mean, sure, it took 14 years for it to happen, but I didn't buy it because I thought this was going to happen. It just happened. So it was like an imaginary lottery ticket. Yeah.
There you go.
I'll jump into skill number two, being persistent. It's simple, but it's not easy because a lot of times it's follow up, whether you're trying to follow up with on a deal to get it done with a seller, whether you're following up with lenders, trying to get the best deal or the best quotes, things like that. It's, hey, nothing's in my buy box. You don't quit after 2 months, because that third month, you'll probably find four things within your buy box. It's just sort of that mentality of being persistent, I found is really essential skill for any real estate investor at any stage of their career.
Yeah, persistent with your contractor, persistent with, in the case of short-term rentals, your cleaners, being persistent with your landscapers, all of those kinds of things. You're just, there's a lot of following up. Did this tenant pay their rent? Is this person coming to see this property? They said they're going to apply. Did you apply? There's a lot of that.
Yeah, it's persistent and being consistent, right? You're continually doing that. But Alan, I did want to mention one thing in the blog. I don't know where that crosses the line from being creepy or persistent, that you were like bugging your soon to be wife for, I don't know how long, like you would call her like every 6 weeks. Like what?
I don't know. Well, I had nothing to lose. I think I talked about this on the other podcast and it was worth it. Still happily married. I saw her and I was like, this is the girl of my dreams. Like, I just knew I wanted to marry her. Like, it was just, I don't, I didn't believe in love at first sight, but I was like, all right, this is the girl. And I kept asking her out, and she's like, I have a boyfriend. I was like, okay, will you go out with me when you break up with your boyfriend? And you know, no one responds well to that question. And I was like, okay, I'll call you in 6 weeks. I'll check in. And I just kept calling every 6 weeks. Hey, but it was funny. Like, it was like, hey, it's me again. I'm just checking in to see if you've broken up with your boyfriend. No, okay, no problem. I'm gonna call you back in 6 weeks. And so
that's great. You got more guts. You got more guts than I do, man. I'm telling you. Maybe your next book should be a relationship book. Is that?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I was always the nice guy, and I never got any girls that I wanted. But the ones I didn't have to work for. But this one, I was like, I know I'm gonna have to work for this, and so I almost became an a-hole. Like, I was just so aggressive. Like, you gotta go on a date with me. My wife wouldn't say almost became an a-hole. She's like, you were an a-hole. Like before I even went on a date with you.
But right.
I won her over on the first date. I was like, that's great. So nervous. So
well, good for you. I'm happy for you guys. But you know, that just goes to show persistence is key, right? And also in real estate, just making sure that you stay on it. I think it's again, it's important to stay on all of the members of your team. And again, if that's contractors, your agent, your lender, someone that's doing your inspection, I mean, you name it, just staying on it, staying persistent, you'll win.
Yeah. Your husband, if he's your handyman.
There you go.
A lot of times to do things.
I would say now with software systems for property management, the persistence is automated. Like, hey, you haven't paid your rent, or hey, reminder, you've got to do this, or I get reminded of repair requests, you know? So a lot of the persistence is sort of automated these days, which makes it a little bit easier. All right. So skill number three to me is for any investor to have is to be long-term focused. You know, real estate is a slow moving market. You know, it has its ups and downs, but it doesn't move as quick as stocks or crypto or anything like that. And it makes for a very illiquid investment because it takes 30 days to buy something, 30 days to sell something at minimum, if not longer. So to me, it's what is the long-term goal? Even if you're flipping a property, I mean, that's 3-6 months out in the future many times. The short-term rental, what's your long-term goal? Am I going to hold this and turn it into a long-term rental one day? Am I going to short-term rental this and move into it? Do I want to just STR it until the mortgage is paid off? That sort of long-term vision, I think, helps you achieve the other two skills of being optimistic and sort of seeing the future 10 years in the future, or however it may be, and being persistent, because you're just like, oh, these are little step-by-step. I'm running a marathon here. It's just one step at a time. And I don't have to win these sprints and win every battle along the way, because you're sort of focused at the long distance finish line.
I think this is one of the hardest skills is delayed gratification, right? Like, I don't know who Simon Sinek says, you know, you go to the gym today, you're not going to see any difference. You go to the gym tomorrow, you're not going to see any difference. But if you go every day for 6 months, you'll start to see a difference, right? And so it's really, you know, it's that persistence, but it's your eye on the prize long-term. You know, when I first got into real estate investing back in 2017, I then, you know, It was hard to see that far into the future, but enough that now I'm approaching, you know, the age of 50 where I can actually leave W-2 work. But it took me years to get here, right? Yeah. So that's, I think it's one of the hardest skills. I mean, that's one of the things I always talk about too, like with my 21-year-old and 23-year-old, because they want, we live in the DoorDash world, man. Like, they get what they want right now. Right. And it's like really having them understand, well, yeah, you invest $50 a month in your brokerage account. Like, you have to look years in the future. So it is a long-term play.
I think there's this also, you said exactly what I was going to say, I think this is the hardest one. And we hear a lot about like the flywheel, this real estate flywheel. And it's like this idea that once you go around the once or twice, it goes faster and faster and faster. And I think part of that reason is once you go around once, you see it then. Like, it takes you, like, some of it is you need momentum, you need to build up equity, maybe to rinse and repeat. Of course, all of those things build up the confidence. But I think some of it is you actually see the outcome of what it does, what it means to have one property, and that makes you want to get more and get more and get more.
So, Lauren, do you know where you heard that real estate flywheel term?
In House Fire?
Yeah. All right. Okay. You were talking like we hear this, and I'm like, Wait a minute. That's in my book. All right. So thank you for reading my book.
Yeah. Lauren. A lot of people say it. I think they all read your book. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But it's not original thought. Okay. Damn it.
I think there can be multiple people having original thoughts at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Those guys are geniuses if they've thought the same thing as me. I'll just throw that out there.
Okay. We're going to have to ask your wife about that one.
What did I miss, guys? So those are my top three essential. You guys have any other ideas of sort of skills that someone can work on, you know, to become a better realtor or real estate investor?
I think, you know, the one thing that I had the hardest time with is really that very first one. Right? Taking action. And I don't know where that fits in these top skills, but I guess it's getting over that fear and to take action. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's, I guess, understand that you're going to take the risk, but the reward can be so great. Right. Like you got to just finally take action. I think that was my, out of these three, the next one would be, don't be afraid to take a risk.
Yeah.
And I think that boils down to believing in yourself. Like, are you the kind of person that has overcome things in the past? Then you can do this. I promise.
I would say another sort of component of that is prioritizing. A lot of people, you know, I always say, well, at least in the South here, put football before real estate. What I mean by that, it's, hey, let's go see this open house. I can't, the Georgia Bulldogs are playing or whatever. And I'm a big Georgia Bulldog fan, but if my priority is to leave my day job so I can watch more football one day, sure, I'll record the game, I'll go to the open house or do whatever I need to do, deal with the tenants, you know, to get it ready. And then I can reprioritize my life in the future once I sort of have this foundation of rental properties. So I think,
you know, what's funny? I think that's why I've gotten more into hockey the last few years. Did the Lightning win back-to-back Stanley Cups? Yes. Also, there are shorter games and they're mostly like Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday nights. And I can do my real estate stuff outside of that. Like football and real estate really does actually kind of.
But you know what? What real estate does allow you to do is then eventually have the freedom to go see more live shows and go see shows. You know, it allows me to, you know what? A concert's in Chicago. I don't bat an eye. I just book a ticket and I go. So it's pretty awesome.
Well, that goes to your point of delayed gratification. Like, do you want to go see that concert today or in the future, go to whatever concert you want on a moment's
notice? Exactly. Go. Yep. Good point.
Okay. I guess that does it. Thank you so much, Chris, for your help with that one. We got some more coming your way. Let's get to the Real Estate is Easy interview segment. Welcome to the Real Estate is Easy interview segment. And I'm joined today by Paul. Paul, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, thanks for having me. My name is Paul. I am a project manager and sales rep for a couple different roofing companies here in Florida over the past few years. Right now, for the past few years, I've been with Armored Roofing and Solar, primarily in the Tampa Bay area, but we do go statewide. Last year, we worked with a lot of different renovation and rental companies, real estate agents, well, primarily retail roofing, but we have been doing a lot recently, you know, especially this past year with the storm that just came through. But we deal with a lot of insurance issues. This past year, I think we were averaging around 10 to 15 roofs a week, which is pretty big numbers going into last year and kind of the way that the economy is. I think that really boiled down to, you know, the insurance stuff that's been going on. So personally, I've worked with a few different roofing companies in Florida. Right now with Armored Roofing, we do every roofing material. And again, we're statewide right now, but I know that this is not just for the state of Florida.
So with the hurricanes, since you mentioned that, let's just touch on that. Mm-hmm. What happens to your business when a big storm comes through? And we had specifically in 2022, we had Ian, who a lot of people may have seen came and devastated the Fort Myers Beach area. Mm-hmm. This year we had Idalia, which hit where we call Big Bend in Florida, which I also lovingly call the armpit. Mm-hmm. Florida. So what happens to like your schedule and things when a storm comes through and tears things up?
Pretty much instead of that standard 3 to 4 weeks that we tell everyone for a replacement, it could possibly go to 3 to 4 months. And that's realistically just when it comes to just manpower and materials. Everybody in the state as a roofing contractor is pretty much using same suppliers. And when a big storm comes through and everybody needs to have the roof replaced at the same time, you know, manufacturers and suppliers, distributors, they just don't have enough material. So back when we had in 2020, right, there was no supply chain, there was nothing. So everyone was waiting 6 months to get stuff done. And it was just horrible. So when these storms come through, you know, pretty much lead times just get really far out, and it's just mostly just manpower, schedule. I mean, we're still working issues. Ian, you know, now this is a year later, you know, we're still working there. We'll still be working there for another year, probably, just because just dealing with insurance companies and supply and just the amount of work, there's just not enough manpower. Even the amount of roofing companies that are in the state, just a lot to get done. And there's only so much that you can get done in a day.
But barring getting hit from a Cat 4 or Cat 5 hurricane directly, how long will a roof last somebody?
So 30-year shingle, and that's always the confusion everyone gets, because they're like, hey, you know, hey, I need to replace my roof. Insurance company says it needs to get replaced, or I'm having problems, I'm having leaks. Here in the state of Florida, this isn't obviously nationwide, and in this beautiful tropical climate that we live in, we have a lot of sun, a lot of rain. Our roofs and our homes take a lot of beating compared to some of other states. Now, a 30-year residential shingle here in Florida will last you about 15 to 20. You're lucky, depending on, you know, where your house is, you might get a little bit more. But the biggest bearing right now is the insurance company. And there's been a lot of changes in the past couple years when it comes to how long they're going to be covering your roof. So the shingles may last, you know, 20 to 25 on your roof. You have no leaks, everything's fine. But the issue is that insurance company is only going to cover it for 15, 20 at the most, if you, depending on your insurance company. It was kind of all over the place, depending on which company you had. Now it's like, okay, hey, 15 years, you got to get a certified roof inspection. If you still have more life, then depending on the insurance company, they'll cover it for longer.
Yeah, you just did a 17-year-old roof for me, or maybe 18, and it was fine. There were no leaks. Like, does it feel bad to, like, or does it just feel bad to me when you're pulling my shingles off for that, and they're still doing their job?
yeah, and it just comes down to that liability or that risk that the insurance company is taking, because you have a roof that is older, and if something were to happen, you know, act of God, storm, they're going to be out because that roof is old and it's not going to be repairable. So that's the risk that they weigh. And it's been a big issue here in the state of Florida for many years now.
How can we extend the life of our roofs? Let's say we're not in Florida and we don't have these insurance companies that are making mm-hmm. us destroy these perfectly fine roofs. Yeah. Let's say we wanted them to last 30 years and we could get insurance for it. How can you do that?
So scheduled maintenance. I tell everybody every single year, they say the same thing. They're asking, hey, what do I need to do? You know, it's always the call that we get is, hey, my insurance company has pinged me to get it changed, or the roof is leaking. That's the call. There's never a call like, hey, I want, you know, you to come out and check my roof and make sure it looks good, right? Make sure there's no damage. How often do you as a homeowner actually get on your roof and walk it? Not often at all. So I always tell everyone, hey, come out, get a free inspection yearly. Your insurance company requires it sometimes. We do certified inspections or take a lot of pictures, put on the letterhead, send it over to you. But just a yearly look over. Hey, you know, make sure everything's good after storm season. Or in other states, just yearly maintenance, cleaning. If you're around a lot of trees, keep leaves and the acid from the trees and all the leaves that are around, it just wears away at the shingles. So it's pretty much, I think I heard in one of the podcasts, someone was saying something about just maintenance and upkeep, right? Because you avoid the big bills in the long run. And that's pretty much where it is with roofs as well. You know, we do a lot of other things, but people forget to get up there and clean something off, or just have a every year or bi-yearly just inspection. Just, hey, take a look over something you may not be able to see from the ground, and just to have someone walk it over, take a look. You know, we do cleanings as well. That's always, you know, beneficial, so then there isn't a lot of algae buildup and stuff like that, and the shingles and the granules can last longer. But just yearly maintenance, just keep upkeep, inspections, make sure there's nothing up there that you aren't seeing, and you don't get that surprise leak in one of your rentals.
Yeah, we had Julius the power washer on. I'm looking at my notes, episode 11. And actually, episode 4, we had a landscaper on that told us the importance of keeping trees off of the roofs.
Yep.
How many different kinds of roofs are there? We talked about shingle. What else do you have?
I mean, you're 9 times out of 10, you're looking at the asphalt shingle, but tile is another big one here in the state. Metal is getting more popular. The galvalumes mixed between aluminum and steel, and that's getting more popular because of the life expectancy, and insurance companies are not really pinging those as often. You're looking at, you know, a 40 to 50 year roof instead of a 15 year roof. And then another one that is extremely popular in this state, even though it is Florida and we do get a lot of rain, is the rolled roofing, or for roofs that aren't pitched for the flat. So on your roof, it was my primarily shingle, but you did have that low slope in the front that did have to have rolled roofing on it. So anything under a certain pitch isn't going to shed water like the higher pitches will. So you have to go with a rolled roofing, which pretty much comes in 4 foot rolls. It's the same asphalt and granules that the shingles are made out of, but it's a solid sheet that gets scorched down with tar and heat from propane torch, and it seals it up so that way water can't get in, because it just doesn't have the lower slopes just don't have the shedding ability. So those are your three primaries that you're going to see are shingles, the rolled roofing, and the metal, and then you mix in the tile there a little bit too. Here in Florida,
My parents' house is in an HOA that requires tile roofs.
Yep. You see that a lot. And some people don't want to pay for that premium, but it is what it is. You chose to live in that neighborhood. There's a few others that you don't really see here. You do see them up north, like the wood shake. It's just not something that's approved here with our wind codes.
That would be like, whew.
It looks really cool. It looks really cool. I've been up north and with some of my family up in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and the wood shake is really cool, but they don't get the weather that we get here. So it lasts a long time. But they do have metal roofs that are cut to the same style that look like that wood shake shingle, which is really cool. But again, that's a premium that you usually don't see on any of the, shingle and rolled roofing is probably going to be your primary for any of the, rentals or Airbnbs and stuff like that.
So let's take like a 1750 or say 1800 square foot single family home. What are the cost differences? I know it varies, but generally between shingle, metal, tile.
So right now, your obviously most cost effective is going to be your 30-year asphalt shingle. Right now, depending on the house, depending on the pitch, depending on first story, second story, you're looking at anywhere between $400 to $500 a square. And that's like a retail price. That's usually the going rate right now here in the state of Florida. And that's going to cover your tear off, your underlayment, pretty much the whole nine yards, permitting and all that kind of stuff. Things can change with pitch and height. And when you move to the next step up, which would be probably like a metal or a tile, you're looking at probably closer to, $1,000 to $1,200 per square. And when I'm saying square, it's 100 square feet. So not a 1x1 square, but it's 100-foot square. That's how we measure for roofing materials is by per 100 square foot, or we call it square. So an 1,800 square foot house is probably going to have around 24 squares of pre-waste roofing material, and that'll run you probably about 26 squares. And depending on the material that you go with, shingle being the cheapest average right now that we're seeing for single family homes is around 12 to 15 grand for a shingle roof replacement.
Got it. And then it would be like twice as much at least to do tile or metal.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're looking at around $1,000 to $1,200, again, depending on the roof and the cuts and the style. There's a few different, depending on the way that your house is built. So you got your standard up and over roof, which doesn't have a lot of cuts. And then you have a hip roof, which has a lot more cuts, a lot more waste, a lot more hip and ridge metal for the tile and the metal roof. And then it just adds a lot more waste because there's a lot more cutting factor that's involved. And then you got your standard rake roof as well. But the hip roof actually has more wind resistance when it comes to the insurance, but it takes more material to get a roofing material on there.
Interesting. Okay. So what should new investors or new homeowners, what should they be looking for in roofs and properties that they're thinking about buying?
So the first thing I always tell everyone, they'll call me and they're looking, hey, I'm an agent, or hey, I'm looking at this house, looking at investment. What should we be looking for? One, I know most of you already know, you got to have a good inspector in your back pocket. That is gold for everyone, because I've seen so many reports in sale, of homes, and I get a call and like, hey, we just bought this house, can't get insurance because they said the roof's too old. And I was like, where's your inspection? And they said the roof is fine. It's like, well, that agent was just trying to sell that house. So a great inspector, the roof inspection or your 4-point, sure you have a good one that that you've used in your back pocket to have that on there. And then two, always check. It's public knowledge. The last permit that was pulled, I've had so many people come and be like, hey, they told me the roof was only a few years old. And I was like, did you look and see when the permit was pulled? No, hasn't been a permit in 15 years. And that's all the insurance company cares about. So make sure that permit was pulled. It was clear. There was a notice of commencement that was filed with the state, because that is the only thing that is going to prove, the shingles could look brand new and you have no leaks, but nobody knows unless there's a paper trail. So that's a good inspector. And then see when the last permit was pulled. And then obviously, there's always some, physical signs that you can look for, which you'll see on the report, granule loss, damage to the shingles, stuff like that, normal wear and tear. But the two best things is make sure you have a great inspection, and then make sure you look and see when the last permit was pulled.
How can we be good partners to our roofers like you?
So communication, I try my best to always be available. You know, I have a lot of people that will reach out and, you know, want an inspection. And what I try my best is to try to get things as quick as possible, especially for investors, right? You know, if there's standard homeowner, I call out, they, you know, they're going to want to meet up and they're going to want to sit down. They're going to want to talk about it. It's their home. They're living in it. But, you know, investors or, you know, people that have, you know, Airbnb and stuff like that, real estate agents, they're looking for, hey, you know, give me an idea quick, you know, because I'm looking at this property and there's lots of technology now. So, you know, communication is great. You know, fill me in on what's going on and what exactly is needed. And, you know, I try my best to, you know, be quick with everything because I know that, you know, time is usually of the essence when this stuff is going on.
Yep, absolutely. I can attest that you are available when I want to talk to you. Okay, so Paul, last question. How do you make real estate easy?
And I'll kind of jump right back to what I was just talking about. I try to make myself available, call or text when, you know, there's questions to be asked. And then just the, you know, the ease of it. So, you know, some are like, hey, you know, like we want to have like a sit down and a talk and an actual inspection. Like, hey, I'm just looking for something quick. We're looking at this property, you know, take a quick look at the roof. We do a lot of measurements from Eagle View now, which is digital. So if you're looking for something like, hey, I need, you know, a quote this day and my schedule is out like a week with actual inspections, you know, I'll pull an Eagle View measurement, send you something over, something quick. So that way you can kind of get an idea of a price, like, hey, is this going to be, you know, be worth it? And then, you know, we can get an inspection later on, but at least you can kind of have an idea. I'll do a little digging, see when the last permit was pulled, you know, stuff that I can do quickly without actually coming out to the house right away. And I find that with investors and real estate agents and people with rentals, that is very helpful for them because usually, you know, time is money and, you know, try to get things quickly. And hey, you know, I've many times helped people with a, you know, quick repair for a leak or something like that. So, but I think the biggest thing is utilizing technology and utilizing, you know, time management and trying to help out as quick as possible and be there and be available.
Can you let people know how to get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, no. My cell phone is pretty much everything that I, you know, work off. It's my personal cell. I don't know if you want to put this number in here.
It's up to you. Or yeah, do you have like...
Absolutely. I also have a Facebook page that is for personal, for business. Armored Roofing is also in Palm Harbor. You can call the office. My cell phone is available for call and text like all hours of the day. But that is 727-688-1668. Again, I work with Armored Roofing. We're out of main offices in Palm Harbor. We have offices down south in Sarasota and up in Pensacola, and are slowly starting to build over in the Orlando area. So we're statewide right now. And again, we love working with investors. You guys help us out and we'd love to help you guys out.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Chris, what do you think about how Paul makes real estate easy?
Yeah, I think one of the ways that Paul makes real estate easy is just being responsive, right? One of the things that he says is being able to respond quickly. I think that's something, especially, you know, if I'm somebody that's looking for a roofer or a contractor, it is so hard to get those people to respond. Very, very hard. Because one, they're on a job, they're busy, right? They don't always, you know, their phone's in their truck, like whatever the reasoning. So being able to respond quickly, that absolutely makes it easy.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And I like just sort of like ballpark, like a lot of times deals are moving fast. Due diligence is winding up. I only have a couple hours left to negotiate. And here's some photos. What's worst case scenario that you see? You're the professional roofer or vendor. And it's like, okay, this looks okay to me, but worst case scenario, I may have to fix this patch. If I do, it'll probably be $1,500. If I have to redo the whole roof, based on the looks of it, don't hold me to this quote, but it might be $8,000. At least I have a little bit more information, a better educated guess going into worst case scenario. It's sort of that sort of clean check, two thumbs up from a person who does this day in and day out is usually all I need. And I can just sort of budget and say, wow, is $1,500 going to be a deal breaker? If so, maybe I'm doing a fight right now for that extra $1,500 credit. Or if it's not going to be a deal breaker, then let's go. Let me focus on some of the other issues that this house may have.
That's why Paul is my go-to roofer right now, because he understands sometimes I'm under contract on something. He knows he may never get this roof job if I never close on this property, but he's going to stop what he's doing and give me a general idea, which I really appreciate. That's why he's done multiple roofs for me in the last couple of years. And in Florida, we need roofs like all the time. Yeah.
Oh, and I get it. Like, awesome. Roofers don't want to spend their day coming out, giving you quotes on a roof, and then you don't buy the house, and that just wasted everyone's time, right? So this sort of hybrid where it's, hey, whatever I can do from my phone or from, you know, Google Maps without leaving my car and meeting you there for a house you may or may not buy. I sort of like this sort of hybrid approach for sure.
All right, that does it for the Real Estate is Easy interview segment. Let's get into Tea Time with Chris. Is that what we'll call it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like matcha. It's good, right?
Okay. Matcha with Chris segment then.
Yeah.
Okay. So matcha with Chris then. This is the segment where our guest host brings a real estate topic to discuss. Could be an article, could be something going on in their real estate portfolio, something that's happened to them in the past. What do you have for us, Chris?
Awesome. Thank you, Lauren. Yeah. So I have an issue that came up rather recently. It was something that it was around having an inspection, or basically lack of having an inspection. All of my properties, I get an inspection no matter what. However, this was in 2020, multiple bids. So of course, what did I do? I waived the inspection. Mm. I won the deal, right? So I had my tenants say, hey, the CO detectors are going off. You know, we need to get somebody out here right away. I'm like, hey, no problem. I have a contractor on speed dial, right? I got him out there to look at it. And one of the first things he says was, oh, that model, that manufacturer and that model, that's been flagged. There's a class action suit against that manufacturer for that particular furnace, right? And they cannot even service it. It needs to be replaced. And it was one of those things where I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be thousands of dollars to replace a furnace. But also is one of those things where because it had been like basically like red flagged, and like vendors knew that this model and make were recalled, and there's this class action suit be going on. Not to say that my inspector would have caught that, but a greater possibility that, hey, this furnace would have needed replaced at time of sale, or I mean, being that it was recalled and cannot be serviced, I would have thought you wouldn't be able to sell it in that condition. That's just my thought, but I don't know. I mean, hindsight's always 2020, but it was one of those things where first thing I did was look back through the records. I'm like, wait a minute, where's the inspection? I like emailed my agent. Hey, didn't we inspect that? They're like, nope. And I was like, okay. So that's the one thing where I, again, am an advocate, always get an inspection, because you just never know.
An inspection costs $600, probably maybe at most, if you're getting a multifamily, $1,000 or something. But I've always found whatever it costs for my inspection, I usually get that credit. Like, they'll find something, $600 worth of credit that I can get. So it pays for itself. So yeah, I'm glad lesson learned, and hopefully everyone listening here can learn from your lesson. A couple of questions, because I'm always trying to find the silver lining, is how old was the furnace?
I want to say 2000. I mean, it's older.
Yeah.
It was like 2000. I don't remember. I don't want to misspeak, but.
Okay. So what I was getting at is, okay, like the CO alarms were not going off prior, right? It wasn't like the tenants or anyone knew that this was an issue. So I don't know.
They've been in there since 2020.
Yeah. Okay.
Not very long.
Yeah. And
it could have been their first winter.
Yeah. Like, I guess where I'm coming from is, was this something that the owner may have not disclosed or known about or not? Like, I don't know if I would know if I had a recalled unit unless it was causing me problems and I tried to get it surfaced, right? That sometimes these things happen even with an inspection, even with an honest seller too, is sort of the picture I'm going to paint. And that goes back to what I was talking about. You got to be optimistic. There's going to be problems. Mm-hmm. There's no perfect house. Issues are going to have, if a furnace is 15 years old, you're going to have to replace it anyway, whether it's been recalled or not, because that's usually end of life. You know, 15 years is a good lifespan for a furnace. So I was trying to get at the age too.
Yeah.
I'm just trying not to make you beat yourself up too much, Chris. That, you know, like these,
I appreciate that. Yeah.
I was going to make a joke about like, what is a furnace, but I'm going to go right past that for a second.
Florida. Sure. Yes.
I know that my inspector looks out for certain electrical boxes that are not insurable anymore. I don't know if he would know about
fuses. Specific. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously fuses, but there's also certain brands and there's different ages and things like that, that I know that he knows about. I don't know if he would know about a furnace at all, but Alan, I was wondering if you could explain what the significance would be of a seller not disclosing something they know about, because thank God there were CO detectors also. Mm-hmm. Cause sometimes I know like tenants pull those down and no matter how many times you inspect, you put them back up, you make sure they're working, they might pull them back down again. So thank God those were there. Number one. Number two, what is the significance, Alan, of a seller who knows there's a problem? Let's say these CO detectors had gone off before, they had had somebody come to fix the furnace and they said, I can't fix the furnace because I'm not allowed to, there's a recall. And then they decide to sell the place instead. What's the significance of that?
Yeah. So you could have a case as a buyer that someone sold a property withholding important, you know, latent defects in the home. This could be like a foundational crack or something that, you know, you've got nuclear, you know, sludge buried underneath your house. If there's sort of information that you withheld, then you could be forced to buy back your home, or at least even after the closing, the seller could also, you know, be litigated into paying for the repairs. That sort of stuff that could be disclosed. That's why most properties come with a seller's property disclosure. And at least here in Georgia, which is a standard form, it'll say, you know, how old's your furnace and your HVAC? When was it last serviced? Age, things like that. And as a realtor for my clients, if our inspection, which usually tells you the company and the age of the furnace, if it doesn't match up, then we have a very valid right to say, give us some money back. Like, we made an offer based on your property because you said the furnace was in 2020. Our home inspector says that the furnace went in 2001, that we need to replace this. Here's a quote that we got to replace it. We think you should be compensating us for this prior to the close, or you fix it yourself, because we put an offer based on the information you provided and that information ended up being false.
And let's say an inspection had happened. Let's say Chris found this inspection, backs out, somebody else buys the property. That person, the seller, then did know. They can't say they didn't know.
They would have to disclose it
when you got something inspected. So that's an interesting side of it too. Here in Florida, seller's disclosures are not required when, I think they're not required at all, but they're for sure not required if you've never lived in the property as like the landlord.
Well, here's another thing why I think you should use real estate agents, not for sale by owner, because if you bought this from a for sale by owner, it's easier to prove that the owner knew something and didn't disclose it. But sometimes as a neutral third party, the agent kind of steps in and says, sorry, we don't have any property disclosures. No one's ever lived here before. And they're all communicating through an agent. It's harder to say that agent knew that their furnace had something wrong with it, you know? So if there is sort of a third party that can be a bit of a shield for some things, granted, if the agent does know about it, they do have to disclose it, or then that agent's license is at risk. But that is sort of a barrier that sort of works for some people. And another reason I think, you know, agents are a good resource.
Yeah, another good idea I do, like I have five townhomes that, you know, every single time when I actually purchased it, again, I did inspections, but also, you know, I go through and make sure it's all, you know, inspected for rental to get my rental license, right? For safety and that type of thing. Mm. And also I usually just call my HVAC guy and say, hey, just do a tune up on the furnace. I don't know why I didn't do it this last time, but normally I do. So that's a good, I mean, it's like, you know, $200 and they come out and just make sure and let you know if something, you know, hey, the blower motor needs to be replaced or whatever. That's just a really good idea. If there's investors out there, you know what, when you get somebody new or get a new property and someone's going to move in, just get a tune-up.
So wait, you're in Minnesota. Is that right?
I am. Correct.
And what you said, a rental license, you have to have a license to be a landlord?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's, tell us about that. That's new to me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So it's issued by that state municipality. So I'm sorry, by the city municipality. So the city is different. So I have different rental licenses, but yeah, the license really, again, so it's depending on the city, sometimes you need to get the inspection every other year. Other time then, and basically then you're just paying the $110 to get it renewed or whatever. But yeah, they go through and it's a lot of making sure you have your smokers and your COs, making sure you have, like, I had one where I needed to add a railing going down to the basement, right? Even though there had never been one there, but I had to add a railing. And it's a lot of times it's ground fault outlets, right? There's no outlets in the kitchen. To your point, Lauren, a lot of times the breaker box isn't up to code. Sometimes if they just have like empty slots, there's no breaker there or something like that. Yeah. So a lot of times when I first buy a new rental, now that I've been doing it for several years, I know what they look for to pass the rental license inspection. I'll fix all that stuff myself. So, you know, the bigger things I get a contractor, but a lot of that I can just do myself. And then they come through. Fire extinguishers, they have to be there. But some of that safety stuff. But yes, to your point, Alan, we do need a rental license based on city. Some people say you have to have it displayed in your rental property, but some places you do not.
Interesting. So I, at least here, that's everything city by city, guys, state by state. In Georgia, some cities you have to have a short-term rental license and it has to be displayed. And some cities you don't. Long-term rental landlord, you don't need a license at all, but they do those annual inspections if you are a part of the Section 8 or Atlanta Housing Authority programs, sort of government assistance. They will do the annual inspection, sort of like what you're talking about. But that's only if you're getting money from the government in some capacity. Lauren, what's the situation in Florida?
In Florida, for short-term rentals, you need licensing, and anything above 4 units, there will be inspections, and any balconies, there will be inspections as well. So same kind of stuff you're talking about, Chris, but only for short-term rentals.
Got it. Yeah. Ours are for long-term as well. And this is interesting too. I mean, I really encourage, again, new investors to, you know, be with the inspector when they're going through that. I've had inspectors that they'll flag an outlet, you know, cause they walk around with a little tester, they'll flag an outlet. Mm-hmm. Oh, this outlet doesn't work. And I'm like, well, that's because it's on this single pull switch over here. And then they're like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's silly things like that. Like, yeah, walk with them, make sure that you're going through it. And then you get to learn what they look for.
Yeah. I love my inspector that I have. Like, he will, in the report, it'll be a line. Here's a picture. This outlet is worked by this switch. And he tells me where they are.
That's great. Yeah.
So if you're listening and you're like, want to know whether there's licensing, then what you need where, I would say reach out to your real estate agent. They should know. Reach out to another investor. Join a local real estate investor forum. Those are probably going to be your best resources. You could probably easily Google city name and license for being a landlord or being a short-term rental. Have you guys used any other resources out there for this information?
No, I usually ask other people.
Yeah. I think, well, and again, some of it, when I first started investing in 2017, it was through the Minnesota Real Estate Investors Association, just because I didn't even know what I didn't know, right? So, but then as you start going, then you just start to, oh, I have a new property. It's in a new city. I need to contact them for the rental. And some cities are super friendly about it and you can do everything online. Yeah. It's super awesome. Other ones are like, here's this form you got to drive down and fill it out. It's all paper-based. Like they were like living in 1990. It's weird.
And then you buy more in the places where it's easy.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. Does that do it, Chris? Did we wrap matcha with Chris?
That's a wrap.
Thank you so much for being here, Chris. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. It was fun.
That was great, Chris. What's your Instagram handle or Twitter handle? What's the best way to get in touch with you on social?
Go ahead and find me on Instagram at Chris Luger. That's me. It's Luger. And then, again, you can always hit my blog at heavymetal.money.
Love it. Chris, Heavy Metal Money, thanks for being our guest host today. Love your insights. And I learned something new as well about Minnesota investing. So there you have it. Got to get your license.
Yep. And we will be back next week, guys, with another guest host. See you then. Okay, that does it for another episode of the House Money Podcast. Let us know what you thought about this new format. Do not forget to follow House Money Media, Adulting is Easy, and Real Estate Maxi, as well as our interview guest and our guest co-host as well. Hope you guys enjoyed this one, and we'll see you next week.
That's it for this week's episode of the House Money Podcast. If you're a first-generation real estate investor, head over to housemoneymedia.com to join our Discord community, take our real estate investing courses, and read our blogs where we answer frequently asked questions from listeners like you. I'm just a voiceover guy. Lauren and Alan will be back next week.